I'm an addict. My name is Michelle. I'm an addict. My name is Michelle. My clean date's March 10th of 2019. I'm real grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. So I had a committee member contact me and said, she asked me, hey, will you share at HACNA? I said, absolutely, I'd be honored. What's my topic? And she said, you know, she told me what the topic was, and I was like, okay. Very interesting. So I have a lot of experience in this area, and I don't think I'm unique in that. And I felt like I was. I was talking to my sponsor about it, and I'm like, oh, man, like, this topic is really uncomfortable. I think it's for everyone, though. She said, do you think you're the only woman that fucked everyone in her home group? No. If there's a name for it, it's because somebody's done it, right? So I was born to two addicts. My mom and dad were both addicts. So as a child, love and acceptance didn't come easy. I fought my entire life to get love and acceptance, even from my mom to this day, and it's still not there. I learned at a very, very young age that sex was a very powerful thing, and it gave me a sense, an illusion of control. When I was 13 years old, I got into a relationship with a much, much older man that was very abusive to me, and he would whoop my ass for not having sex, right? So that's when I learned that this was a really, really powerful thing. And I used it. I used it from then on, not only to get what I wanted, but I would withhold it to get what I wanted in different areas. I became a dancer, entertainer, stripper, whatever the fuck you want to call it, at 17. And it was a way of life. It was what I did. I used my sexuality. I used it for everything. And I always would say, oh, I'm not having sex for drugs, right? I'm not having sex for drugs. But I sure the fuck had sex for money, and I'd go buy dope with that money. So, you know, we can sugarcoat it however the fuck we want to, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. Call it what the fuck it is. And then I came into the rooms in 2017. I was 33 years old. I had no fucking life skills. Sex was what I used to cope. It's what I used to get love, acceptance, friendships, and I came in and I got clean south of Houston, in the Tri-County area. My home group was the Here and Now group in Texas City, and I came in there and I fucking acted out, man. It was some really sick behavior, but it was all I knew. It was all I fucking knew. I didn't have any other skills. It's what I had used since I was a child. And it was fucking, when I tell you, man, it was fucking one after another, after another. I could walk into my home group on any given fucking day and there was at least two or three motherfuckers in there I'd slept with. And I had to just keep coming back, right? Because I wanted to fucking use. I've been shooting dope since I was 14 years old at this time. I wanted to use. And that was the only thing I really had at that time. That was the only thing. That and fried chicken to change the way I felt. And I say fried chicken because when I got clean, I stayed at a halfway house. And I used to walk to work every day. And this is a huge part of my story because it was so humbling. I would walk from this halfway house down this Palmer Highway. It is a long fucking walk. And it was summer. And I used to walk to Popeye's and I would fry chicken. But there was a Hart's chicken on the way. So I would leave outpatient and I would go eat at the buffet, the chicken buffet. And then I would go to work and I would eat chicken again. And I would tell myself that if I took the skin off of it, the crunchy stuff, the good part, then it was okay if I ate the chicken. And I did that. I did that for a while. And I stayed at this halfway house. It's faith-based halfway house. I had to get up. I had to do these Bible studies, and I was real uncomfortable. But I wanted something different, and I was told that if I wanted something different, I had to do something different. And I had never done anything like this in my life. I've been to the penitentiary 3 times. And the only time that I went to church or Narcotics Anonymous meeting in there was during the summer when I needed some fucking air conditioning. So to be told at this halfway house that, you know, I had to do these things. I had to go to, you know, this church, I was real uncomfortable, but I did them. I just kept doing them because it was working. And I got about, I've been through a few sponsors, you know. I told myself that, so I got one sponsor, worked 1, 2, 3. I was actually using when I worked that 1, 2, 3. And I got honest in that time period. And so I needed to get a new sponsor, right? And then I got another sponsor and I worked 1, 2, 3 and found some bullshit reason to find another sponsor. And then, I said, you know what? I have issues with women. I have issues with women. So I need to get me a male sponsor. So I did. I did. I got a male sponsor, and this man has been with me from the moment that I walked into treatment. And they say that men will pat you on the ass and women will save your ass, but this man has saved my ass countless times. And he walked me through the 12 steps. And through that process of going through the 12 steps, I realized that the women weren't the fucking issue. I was the issue. And so I said, okay, I'm going to find a woman. And I'm going to work the 12 steps with a woman. And I did, and I found her. And you know what? We worked 1, 2, and 3. And I said, no, I moved. I moved areas. And so my excuse was, is I need another sponsor in my area. And I moved back to the area where I had all those behaviors, back to where that home group was. And I went back to that male sponsor because I was going to process my 4-step with him. And we did. And we sat and we processed that 4-step. And I love him. I do. But there's just some things that he doesn't get. He doesn't understand. And though I never felt judged by him, I was just never able to get, like, butt naked honest with that man. Because he's not going to get why. He can identify with the pain, but man, he don't fucking understand why I fucking do the shit I do. But I felt like, you know what? So, and he's like 70 years old. So there's that part as well. So we processed my 4-step. And then I really thought about it. Like, why do I keep going back to that? Why do I keep going back to this man that I'm so fucking comfortable with? So I reached out to a woman that's somewhat in my area, close enough. And I talked to her and I said, man, I really need to process this 4-step with a woman.
Right.
I need that. And I had heard her share in the past, and she's very passionate about the steps and the traditions, the concepts. And I wanted that. I wanted what she had. And so we set, and I processed my 4-step for the first time with a woman about a month ago. And it was very painless, you know? I feel like sometimes I feel unique. I feel like that I'm the only person that's done some of these things. With a year clean, a little bit over a year, you know, I was working steps and doing all the things, right? All the things that are suggested, going to meetings, working with others, service, praying, meditating, all that. And I'm on my 10th step and I'm living with this person that truly believes we're in a relationship. Man done bought a house, done furnished it, taking me on trips, buying me this, buying me that. The only thing missing from my life at that time was the dope, because I was lying to him day in, day out. But I'm writing about it. I'm on my 10th step. You know, I'm writing about this shit because it's not fucking okay. And it's eating my lunch every fucking day. I'm talking to my sponsor about it. I'm sobbing. I'm miserable, right? I have all these things that I think I need. And my sponsor said, you need to get out of there. And I didn't know how at this point. I done quit my fucking job. I have nothing. And I got myself back into the situation that I said I'd never fucking do again. I'll never depend on a man ever again. And there I was. And so one day, this individual, I left to take my kids home, and he picked up my step work and he read my step work and took pictures of my step work and told me to get the fuck out. That was God doing for me what I fucking could not do for myself. That situation had gotten so fucking painful, and I felt stuck. I felt stuck. I didn't know how to make a move. What to do next, the fear, the uncertainty, everything riddled my body, and it brought back a bunch of old feelings. And so he told me to get the fuck out, so I got the fuck out. I probably did some stuff that wasn't right at that time, but I didn't know what else to do. I felt like my back was up against the wall. And I got out, and I went and stayed with somebody in the program. You know, there I was, you know, renting a room from somebody in the program, all my shit in a storage unit, back to fucking square one. And my higher power has a way of humbling me, because I'll see it. I'll pray about things, and sometimes I can hear my higher power speak, and I'll disregard, and I'll do it my way, because I can trust me to get it done, right? I'm always gonna get it done, and I'm always humbled. So I'm working and I'm living with. But I say all that to say, like, in that relationship, that guy thought that if he just kept doing and he kept buying and he kept putting money in my bank account and just a little bit more, just this will do it. This will do it. She going to let me fuck. She going to let me sleep with her. Yeah. Never. I was not going to do it. And I knew I wasn't going to do it. But I made him think just maybe. Maybe. We bought a brand new king size bed when we moved into this house. You could see where I slept, and you could see where he slept. There was a big, like, ridge in the middle of it. And I kept telling myself, like, he had to fucking know. Like, how did he not know that that was never going to happen? But he had that, you know, a little bit of hope that they hang on to, right? Like, she going to have a bad day one day. Motherfucker never came. So he was hurt, right? He read that shit in my step work, and what he read in my step work was the truth. He read the truth, right? And it was very painful for him. And you know, I'm working on my sixth step right now, and I'm gonna approach that eighth step, and those people are gonna go on that list, and they say when to do so. And, you know, I don't even know. That's some shit I'm going to have to get with my sponsor about. Because, you know, I acknowledge my part. And I know when I'm making amends, it's not about his fucking part. And I struggle with that. But I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because I had an agency in the state of Texas telling me that if I didn't stop using, I'd never see my kids again. And I didn't want that. You know, there have been plenty of times that I could see my kids. I didn't want to see my kids. My kids were in the way of me using. But to have somebody tell me, if you keep using, you'll never see your kids again. I guess it was like a, in spite of, right? I'm going to stay clean in spite of. And so I got clean. And I got 3.5 years clean right now. And I still don't have what I came for. I came because I wanted my kids back. And I've done it all. You know, I did everything the state asked me to do and some. And I still don't have my kids back, but I've gotten so much more in the process. I do have a relationship with my children today. I'm trusted on Fridays to pick up my children and take them to stay with me. But I had to do a lot of work to get there. At first, it was, I got to spend a couple hours with them. And then I got a day with them. And my kids have seen the progression. My kids would come to the penitentiary and visit me. And then my kids would come to the hospital, the treatment center, to visit me. Then they would come pick me up from the halfway house. And now they come to my home. They come to my home, and my kids know that I'm an addict. They're 7, 9, and 13, and they know their mom's an addict. They know that I'm sick, and they know that this is what I have to do to stay clean. So, 2:05. Okay. So, today, I am in a committed relationship with somebody that I don't need anything from. I don't need this person to pay my bills. I pay my bills. If I choose to have sex with this person, it's because I want to. We have a good relationship. It's mutual respect. We communicate. I don't feel like if I tell this person, man, I really don't want to. I don't feel like it. I'm fucking tired. I'm gonna go to bed. That they're not gonna fucking love me in the morning. Do I still need to be validated all the time? Yeah, and I know he gets fucking sick of that shit. But it's a process, man. It's a process. I've never been loved properly in my life. There was always conditions to it. If you don't do this, I'm not going to be here. If you don't do this, I'm going to whoop your ass. And that's been, you know, since I was a child. I didn't even know what love looked like because the relationship I got into at 13 years old taught me that love really fucking hurt. And that if you love me and I don't do what you say, then there's consequences to it. And so in return, the relationship I got into after that, I became the abuser. I would knock the shit out of you if you looked at me sideways. And I was full of anger and resentments. And back to, you know, my mom, when I was a kid, I always wanted, you know, your mom is your mom, right? And I had a good mom. I had a really good mom when I was in elementary school up till about third grade. I knew that the chaos was always there. You know, my mom's an addict. My mom is an addict. She fucked me up, you know, at a real young age. She started using. And when I just wanted to be with my mom, the best she could do was take me to the bar with her and leave me for a couple hours while she did whatever she did. And I remember being fourth or fifth grade, and I'm 38 years old, so this was a long time ago. Fourth or fifth grade, being at the bar with my mom, and she said, "I'll be right back." Those were her famous words, "I'll be right back." My mom was gone for like fucking forever. But she had left a bottle of a little plastic bottle of vodka at the bar. So I drank it, you know. I'm fourth, fifth grade. I'm drinking. I got the bartender giving me orange juice. And I got fucking drunk. I got really drunk. And I remember my mom coming back after however long. And she was pissed that I drank her vodka. She was pissed at me. 10-year-old me. Because she left me at the bar and I drank her vodka. I was fucking upset with myself. Damn, why'd you drink her vodka? And that was my mom, right? That's the best she could do. It's the best she could do. She was sick. She was an addict. I started shooting dope with my mom when I was 14 years old. That was how we bonded. That was our thing. And my mom right now, she's sitting in a hospital in Katy, Texas. She had a stroke a couple months ago. And everybody in the family looked at me like, "What are you going to do? It's your mom. That's your mom. The fuck am I going to do?" And I went and I did some things for her, right? I'd pick up her medication. I'd go change her sheets and I'd do the things. But I didn't do it because I owed it to her, because I don't owe her shit. I did it because it was the right thing to do.
Right.
It was the right thing to do. Man, I have a lot of resentment for my mother, but that's not step work shit. That's outside shit. I had to seek outside help for that shit. And then she fell, man. She fell, a couple days ago. She broke her hip, fractured her arm, because she's got the tools that she needs to get around, but she just like refuses to use them. So there I go. I made sure you had 3 sources to help you get around and you didn't use them. You fell. It's on you. This time around, I have not gone to the hospital to see my mom. I just don't want to deal with it right now. She manipulates me. I'm your mother. Well, I could have used that, you know, growing up. I could have used a mother growing up. And this is all my shit, right? So I say my mom was sick, right? She did the best she could given her situation. And I really want to forgive my mom because it's heavy on my heart. It fucks with me. It's not for her. Because I want my kids to be able to forgive me one day. Because I also put my kids through some shit, right? I abandoned my children. And they asked me the hard questions. "Mommy, why don't we live with you? Why weren't you there? Why did we have to come to that place to see you?" And I keep it very age appropriate. You know, they're 7 and 9. My 13-year-old, she's well aware. She was along for the ride. But it's hard, you know. And so when I see my kids asking me these things, these questions, these hard questions, I'm honest with them. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be there. I didn't know fucking how to stop using. I didn't know how to not use. All I knew was that was my solution for a very, very, very long time. So when I came into Narcotics Anonymous and I saw people recovering, I was like, I wasn't sure that I could recover too. And I didn't for a long time. You know, I used to sit in my home group. Hi. And I would chair meetings. And I went into a treatment center one time and spoke. I wasn't clean. And there's and how it works, it says at the beginning, and I used to always get a little knot in my throat. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it. And I wanted what everybody had, right? But could I stop using? And so I had a clean date that I hung on to. I wrote it on the fucking wall and everything. And it's January 21st of 2018. That was when I went back to treatment. But that was the last time. And I guess I held on to that clean date because, you know, I shot dope for a very, very long time. When people used to ask me, what do you like to use? I would tell them anything that's water soluble. It didn't matter. I didn't discriminate. And that fucking needle brought me to my knees every single time. And so January 21st of 2018 is the last time I stuck a needle in my arm. And that's big to me. You know, I get it. Believe me, I get it. But that's big to me, you know, because that was something I couldn't not do. And so finally, you know, I decided to get clean and get a sponsor and work steps honestly. Because I was, of course, was never honest before. And I got a job and I started working a lot of hours. I remember at one point I worked 23 days straight, 13, 14 hours a night. I wasn't staying connected. I wasn't going to meetings. I wasn't calling other people, other addicts. I wasn't calling anybody. I was working and sleeping. And I had about 3 or 4 months clean, like really clean, longest I'd been clean since I was 12 years old. And I got high. And I thought to myself, okay, it was one time, you don't have to tell anybody. Nobody has to know. Because I felt like everyone expected me to use because I had those behaviors and I couldn't stay clean. But the very next day I went and I picked up a white key tag on March 10th of 2019 and I haven't used again. Right. So I recently, so the Houston area, I grew up in Houston, Texas. As a matter of fact, I used to use in this hotel. Yeah, full circle, right? Full circle. So I recently moved from Katy, Texas to back to the Tri-County area where I got clean. And the closest meeting, the most convenient meeting for me, is the Here and Now group in Texas City. And that is where all those men were, right? Some of the motherfuckers still in there. And this is the first time in, since I've gotten clean, I don't have a home group. I don't have a service position. I go to therapy more than I go to meetings. And I'm just being honest because it's fucking with me. And I tell people I'm okay. I'm good. I'm fine. Right. But I'm not. I don't feel like using, but I feel a huge disconnect, and I don't like that shit, man. I walk into those, I walk into that meeting, and I don't think it's my shit, right? It's not the people there. I felt like through the step working process, I had put that shame and guilt. I'd worked through that. But every time I walked through those doors, I picked that shit back up, and it's heavy. And I try to, you know, hold my head high because that's not who I am today. That's not who I am. That's not who I ever was. It was a defense mechanism because I needed you to love me. And if I felt like laying on my back for fucking 30 seconds or whatever was going to get it, then that's what the fuck I was going to do. It's not. And so I have some women at that group that have been along this journey with me since day one, since the day I walked in to that meeting. And, you know, we have our ups, we have our downs, you know, we all struggle with our strong personalities. That's how I'll put it. We have strong personalities. But, you know, and I talk about it, you know, and I shared openly in that, in a women's meeting one day, because I still struggle with, they say, oh, we don't judge. The fuck you do.
Right.
The fuck you do. Cause I'm judging.
Yep.
I'm fucking judging. So when I go in there today, I really try to hold my head up. But it's hard, man. Like, because the man that I live with today, the man that I share a home with and a life with, these motherfuckers were his homeboys, you know? So it's tough, man. Like, I'm standing there and like, it's uncomfortable, right? And I try to dignity and grace, but that shit don't come easy. Not for me anyways. Because it's hard to even look these motherfuckers in the face. It's hard when you're standing in a group of people and you don't fuck three or four of them. And they know it, and I know it, and they know it, and it's like, damn. But, you know, I have to remind myself that that is not who I am anymore. But it's really hard when I get up and I look at myself, and it's like, man, you did that shit. But I felt like, I know that I did it because I felt at that time that's what I had to do. I felt like that was all I brought to the table. I was just walking around with a bunch of fucking liabilities and zero fucking assets. But through the step working process and a loving sponsor and reaching out to people in my support group, I do have a lot of assets. I do bring a lot more to the table than that. I have a sponsee that we have a lot in common, and I see myself in her, and I love her very much. I love her very much, and working steps with women and seeing them at the beginning, and then like getting to walk through this process of recovery with them, it's a beautiful thing. Like, it is, I get emotional, and I'm not really an emotional person. I say I'm not, but I'm real sensitive now. But I cry, working steps with these women, seeing the light come on, seeing that they understand that they're worth it, and they don't have to settle today, and they can learn to love themselves. Because, man, I'm still learning to love myself. I am so fucking hard on myself. I have people tell me all the time that I can put the bat down at any time, but it's hard. Self-acceptance is something that I struggle with. I think we all do. I say certain things and it's like I'm unique, right? I'm different. Nobody had it as bad as I did, right? And then I come in and I see this woman, you would never fucking think it, tell my story. And that's when I knew that I could recover too. When I heard a woman, I would have never thought by looking at this woman that she had lived a previous life. And then she spoke and she told my story with a lot of me too. And so it's 2:24, but yeah, I'm real grateful for this program. This topic is very uncomfortable. And I'm glad that, I was asked to speak on it because I feel like I know that I've had a lot of growth in this area. And, when they asked me to speak on it at first, I took it as a fucking insult. I said, the fuck do I look like? Exactly. And then, the person said, you've had a lot of growth in this area. And it shows. So, that's all I have. Thank you.
My name's Terry. I'm an addict.
Hey, Terry.
Always grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I should have known that the room would be packed with a topic like this. You know, I'm a little nervous. I have some certain fears that I have when people ask me to share, and one of them is getting up and having to go to the bathroom during the middle of the share, you know, but it hasn't happened yet. And one of the things is because I'm getting older and I hang out with some older people, and I've seen them have, one of them had to do that before, and it just shook me to my core, you know. And so, hey, I want to thank the Hackner, the Houston area, for inviting me down to share. A friend of mine called me, who I haven't seen since I've been here, and asked me to come share. But I'm always willing to be of service in Narcotics Anonymous because I believe in the program. I believe in what we do here, you know. It's funny, they gave me, I was in Miami a couple weeks ago, and I chaired a meeting with the same topic, you know. And so it was like, wow, how could that happen, you know? And so, like, my topic is looking for love and settling for sex. And they gave me the page number out of It Works How and Why. And I went to it, and it's worded a little different in It Works How and Why. And so in It Works How and Why, it says, we may find that our sexual beliefs and behaviors have caused problems in our relationships. And then it says, we may have settled for sex when we really wanted love. So that's what it actually says, and It Works How and Why, you know. And so, like, and it's funny because, like, until you get here and you get into the step working process, you don't know that that's what the fuck you're doing. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I didn't know that I was selling for sex over love. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know I was fucking looking for love. You know what I'm saying? I just really didn't. I didn't know that that's what the search was for. You know, it wasn't until I got here that, like, there's one of the earlier chapters in our basic text. It might be why we're here. It says we were searching for an answer, and we thought we had found it in drugs. I didn't understand that search was actually for love. Now, let me break it down a little more simplistic. what they're really talking about when they're talking about looking for love, what they're really talking about for me is looking for self-acceptance. That's what they're really talking about for me. Because if I don't have any self-love, I don't have any love for anybody else. So if I don't have love for myself or for you, I'll settle for anything. You know? And so I'm grateful that, like, through the step working process, because it was in step one that, like, when I finally, it hit me there's a section in step one that says, no, it's in who's an addict. It says this here. It says, how does it say it now? It says, my ability, my conscience and my ability to love has been sharply affected by my drug use. So I don't know about anybody else, but I had to take a real look at that. What the fuck do they mean it's been affected by the drug? Sharply affected. So what I'm talking about is that, like, in the step working process, one of the things that I got with was that, like, in the unmanageability section. In the unmanageability section, it talks about a lot of untrue beliefs that it didn't say that people put on me. It's some things that I came up with myself, you know, some things that, like, me being a young child. Now, and let me tell you, as addicts, I believe, like I got a son that's like 13 years old, and I think I need to sit down with him that he has addict tendencies. I'm not going to say he's addicts because we say we can't call anybody addict, but he has addict tendencies. So I really should need to sit down with him, and I need to do like we do in Narcotics Anonymous, look up definitions with him and explain to him like what this looks like, you know, because I didn't have anybody to do that for me. So what I did was the literature talks about most of the information came from misinformed people. But I'm the one that misinformed me. Because I'm the one told myself what different situations I seen, what that was. I'm the one told myself what I thought love was. I'm the one that thought, like, when I saw my mom and my stepfather together and he was sleeping with every woman in the block, and then some, they're like, oh, because he's sleeping with them, they love him. I told myself that. They didn't tell me that. That's what I gathered by myself from looking from the distorted perspective that I have, because I didn't understand, or no one else understand, that I suffer from the disease of addiction and it distorts rational thought. So I didn't know that everything I was viewing was distorted. And so, therefore, like, my first glimpse of what I thought love was having sex. And then, like, not only did that mean looking at them happen, but when I first had sex and I was having sex and she said, I love you. So I thought, this is love. You know? And so it was easy for me to settle for sex because I thought it was love. You know, and therefore, every woman that I ran across, I tried to distract the love from having sex. You know, it was easy for me. That's what I thought it was. You know, if I do it just right. I thought that if I did it just right. I'm serious. I'm serious. I thought that if I just did it just right, that she wouldn't leave me. That she would stay with me. And that she would love me unconditionally. You know? And so most of my relationships was based in sex. Because I thought that's how you get love from someone. You know, and so it was only through the step working process that I started seeing some different things for myself with the help of sponsor that I started seeing. One of the first things that I had to do in here, our literature says we must relearn many things. Yeah. So not only do I have to relearn some things, I have to learn some shit up in here, you know, and I had to fucking redefine what I thought love was. See, because I thought love, and I share this all the time as an addict. And this is my belief. This is Narcotics Anonymous. This is my belief. I believe that most addicts can't differentiate between love and obsession. So what I'm talking about is that, like, coming here, I thought love was a feeling. And so, like, when I get that ooey gooey feeling, I thought that was love. And so when I see her and she see me and we glance at each other and I get them butterflies and then we hook up, then I thought that was love. Only to find out 6 months later, I don't like this motherfucker. and that, and that feeling's gone again, and now I'm trapped in a fucking relationship I don't want to fucking be in. And at the beginning, it was like, but I thought I loved her. And the fucked up part is that can't nobody tell me I don't. You fuck around and come up and tell me, boy, you infatuated. Tell me some bullshit like that. I'd be like, man, you don't know. You don't know what I feel. So for me, I had to get involved in the step working process. And not only in the step working process, because hopefully I got one in here. Our liturgy is funny because, like, even in that paragraph, it gives me the program of Narcotics Anonymous is a funny thing. It gives me a problem, right? And then it, like, breaks it down on what they're talking about when they say this is the problem. And then all of a sudden, once it breaks the problem down, then they go into the solution to the problem. And so one of the problems, this here says, and self, I like, love this IP, it says, the problem. It says, the problem. The lack of self-acceptance is a problem for many recovering addicts. It says, this subtle defect is difficult to identify and often goes unrecognized. Often goes unrecognized. Many of us believe that using drugs was our only problem, denying the fact that our lives have become unmanageable. Even after we stop using, this denial can continue to plague us. Many of the problems we experience in ongoing recovery stems from our inability to accept ourselves on a deep level. On a deep level. What I'm talking about there is that, like, and I'm sure as addicts that most of us experience this, that you don't feel like you're good enough. That you, like, think that everybody else, you would rather be anybody other than you. To get to a point in your life where you feel like you're in denial that God has made you who you supposed to be. I'm talking about, like, that's my sponsor called it self-hatred. And if I got self-hatred going on when I don't like self, when I'm looking in the mirror and I don't like who I see, or when I'm trying to be someone else, which is the same fucking thing, that's self-hatred. When I put on the airs and all the motherfucking, when I first got clean, you know, I thought, like, okay, started again. But for me, it was the motherfucking cologne. Cause, like, I needed somebody to validate me. And so, like, if I put on enough cologne, the women be like, oh, you smell good. And so I look forward to going to the meetings where y'all can say, oh, he smell good. Because some of y'all would hug me a little tighter and a little longer. Hey, and I put on so much fucking cologne that I didn't even know I had allergies. And I'd be fucked all up. I'd be fucked up. I can't breathe. But I smell good, you know? And so I'm looking for that self-acceptance from something outside myself.
That's right.
So, like, sponsor takes me in order to, for me to deal with this here, took me to the fifth tradition where it's talking about, like, I have to be fully self-supporting. To the seventh tradition where I have to be fully self-supporting. Like, when I'm talking about self-supporting, I'm talking about I have to show myself self-love.
Come on.
I'm talking about, like, I don't like this statement. I use it a lot, but I don't like it used on me. Like, no one's responsible for my emotional stability. Nobody's responsible for my emotional well-being. Like, I have to take responsibility for myself. I have to take care of myself. And once I start learning how to take care of myself, I start to realize what they talk about and We Do Recover. And We Do Recover, it says some slick ass shit. They slick in our liturgy, man. Slick, Let me find this real quick. And we do recover. I know you'll help me, right? Yeah, they're going to get me. Hey, this is what happened for me. This is really what happened for me. It says, today, securing the love of the fellowship, we can finally look another human being in the eye and be grateful for who we are. Y'all. Hey, listen to this here. When I stop looking for love, I find that it's already here. See, that's my problem. As a matter of fact, in step two, it says part of our insanity is thinking something outside ourselves could fix what's going on inside of me. See, I gotta have love for me. And once I start having love for me, but the process of having, I think it's in, I don't remember where it said in the literature, but it talks about like the process of me loving myself is the process of me going through the step working process, identifying motherfucking those patterns, those patterns that are fucking worth nothing for me, and then start dealing with those patterns in step 6, 7, and then motherfucking living, being responsible in steps 8 and 9 for them. And then once I'm responsible for them, all of a sudden, I start seeking to understand rather than be understood. I'm talking about getting to a place, like, because, like, this is one of the funny things about me, right? Like, and I hear people say, I don't love everybody in the rooms. Well, you know what? I love you because of who you are.
Right.
I love people. I just love people because I know who you are.
Yeah.
So because I have 11 stepped in me where I understand where I got to the point where I start seeing the God within. Wow. So once I started seeing the God within me, I start seeing the God within you.
Come on, let's check.
So you are worthy of my love no matter what. No matter what you do, no matter who you are, you worthy of my love. And so once I can start getting to that point, I can start loving me and start giving myself a break because I'm just a human being here too, trying to learn how to live life on life's terms, and I'm motherfucking just practicing. You know, like, the literature talks about, like, the sexual, some of the sex acts and some of the sexual things we did is difficult to talk about. And that's true. And the main reason is because we all feel like we no one else did it. But when you come into a room like here and you've been around here for a while, you start understanding. Like, I'm talking about, like, one of the things that I do for myself is I surround myself with people that tell the truth about themselves. So, like, I'm talking about, like, I hang out with people that fucking tell the truth about themselves. That motherfucking, hey, like, I'm talking about, like, it's okay. You know what I'm saying? I got to be around people that's willing to tell the truth about themselves, because what happened for me is when I was around people talking about doing skullduggery shit, as my sponsors say, talking about, like, having sex with other men, when they're talking, when they're telling those things, it gave me the courage to talk about them too.
Yes,
sir. You see, I couldn't talk about it until I heard you guys talk about it.
Right.
So I saw you guys talking about it, and once I heard you guys, and I seen that you guys could give yourself a break, it gave me the ability to give myself a break.
Yes.
Because self-love is about giving yourself a fucking break.
Yes.
If you don't give yourself a break, can't nobody else give you a break. I beat myself up enough. I hated myself coming in here. I don't know about you guys, but I did ungodly things out there. As a matter of fact, I did ungodly things when I first got here. Hey, so I started being able to give myself a break, man. Because just like she said, I don't know about that. I think God, I'm so grateful for God, man, that cause like, one of the things is that like, my sponsor talk about this all the time. I'm capable of some fucked up shit. Yes, sir. I'm talking about like, my sponsor said he the sickest person he know, but like, I'm capable of some sick shit. So knowing that about myself, that like, I know that about you too. You might not admit it, but I know that about me. Hey, so like, listen to me. And, one of the things that's funny is that like our program is catered to the disease of addiction. So one of the things about me is that because I hear a lot of people say, you can't blame everything on the disease of addiction. Okay.
Come on, Terry.
Okay, you can't blame everything on the disease of addiction. But for me, the things that happen ain't the fucked up things. It's the way I perceive things. And the way I perceive things is in a self-centered perspective. And I can't get to a solution until I understand that that's where I'm at with it. But once I understand, our literature says denial of our addiction kept us sick. But an honest admission of our addiction enables us to stop using. So once I can recognize what the problem is, then I can move into a solution. But long as I'm denying what the problem is, I'll never move into the solution. So for me, it's always understanding how is the disease of addiction affecting me personally. What motivated me? What part of self-centeredness, what part of the triangle pushed me into that area to do the things that I did? And once I can get with that, once I can inventory that and I can get with that, then I can move into the solution because I can start, me and Deborah, we was talking earlier, because like, I hear people all the time talking about going surrendering. Well, like, so like, surrendering for me isn't mean like saying, okay, God, that's not a surrender for me. Surrender for me is like getting sharing with someone what I done, getting a solution, and then following that solution up. Basically, what I'm talking about is practicing a principle instead of fucking defect. All right. That's a surrender for me. Even though I know she's gonna leave, don't go over and manipulate her to have sex with me anyway, trying to keep her there. Practice abstinence and motherfucking leave her the fuck alone and give her a fucking break. You know what I'm talking about? And so that surrender, practicing the principle, is an act of self-love for me. I can't see it at the moment, but later on down the line, I'll see it for what it's worth. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, therefore, I can start applying the principles of the program so I could give myself some love so I don't have to try to extract it from you. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah,